From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. If you know one thing about Harvey Weinstein, it's his passion. It can sometimes be tenacious. It can sometimes be soft and tender. I think it's all of those things for the movie Untouchables, which is now opening in the United States. Harvey, first of all, thanks so much for coming.
Elvis, it's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me about...
I'm going to be soft and tender.
At least at the start. But I've got to ask you, what about this movie struck you so much? Because it strikes me as being a particularly kind of universal story, but what is it that really hit you about it?
It's just very rare that you see a true story that at least, you know, moved me so much emotionally. And I've never had a movie where people, you know, put billboards on and talk about how much they love this movie. It's a true story about, you know, a French immigrant and a very aristocratic Frenchman who's paralyzed, and one takes care of each other, but not in any traditional way. They smoke funny cigarettes, they chase girls, they jump out of airplanes.
And it has a very interesting, funny kind of trick opening.
You know, this is just pure, gorgeous storytelling. And I think a lot of people don't know about French immigrants and the problems in France where, you know, 10% of the population of France is the immigrants. There's even a political party who condemned this movie. I mean, this movie is a fun, upbeat, good-feeling movie. And Jean-Marie Pen wrote that, "I hope France doesn't become a handicapped person being taken care of by an immigrant caretaker," and blasted it for being so popular in France. So,
and that's the thing that's fascinating about this movie, too, that it's hugely popular. In fact, in some ways, you find yourself competing with your own movie because it basically unseated The Artist. And Omar Sy, who's one of the stars of the film, beat out the star of The Artist for the César.
You know, he beat Jean Dujardin, and on that Friday, Jean Dujardin called me right after he lost to Omar, and he said, "I better win the Oscar now. Otherwise, you and I are both dead." Thank God it turned out.
But what do you think, recently having been basically made an honorary citizen of France yourself, what do you think there is in the movie that appeals to the French sensibility?
It's the second biggest movie of all time in France, but it's the biggest French movie ever around the world. This movie appeals to people in Korea, China, all over the world, Spain, Italy. It's just an incredible story. The fact that it's true and the fact that two people can touch each other that way and they both make each other better. And the movie's not afraid to deal with some of the tough stuff, but it's just so romantic and friendly and upbeat. It's just, you know, sometimes you just look at something and go, "That's beautiful." I didn't find the meaning of life in Some Like It Hot, but I thought it was one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. You're not going to find the meaning of life in The Untouchables, but like Some Like It Hot, I mean, you know, the feeling you're going to get when you walk out of a theater is that kind of energetic, just say, "Wow, I've just been through something that's just seamlessly beautiful and knitted and weaved together by two really talented filmmakers so beautifully, too."
And it's funny you bring up Some Like It Hot, because between Francois Clouzet and Omar Sy, there is that kind of chemistry, movie star chemistry, isn't
it? That's what I thought. They remind me, you know, when I first saw it, they have a chemistry together like Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. They really are that throwback to those, you know, when we used to make movies with two guys in the movie. You know, not just today, it's like one star only. You know, I mean, I love in the old days when, be it comedies like Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis, you know, or Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster, or Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. You know, there was a pairing, you know, I mean, from the 50s on, you know, that you would see over and over again. And there was a familiarity, you know, that the audience had with these, you know, duos. And they play off of each other brilliantly. And Clouzot and Omar, I mean, one is not good without the other. So you watch these two amazing actors on screen.
That shockingly effusive voice you're hearing is that of Harvey Weinstein. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. We're talking about the French film Untouchables, which I guess I find myself thinking, too, a movie that maybe now a lot of people in this country know and love so much. But I was thinking about Borsellino and that relationship between Belmondo and Alain Delon, just two actors really having pleasure in each other's company, is the way it felt to me.
You know, Elvis, you know, when I was working in the post office in New York, putting my way through college, You know, not many people knew who Jean-Paul Belmondo or Alain Delon were in the United States. So I'm sitting in the post office, and I said to my guys, you got to cover this shift. And they said, why? I said, because Borsellino opened, and I don't know if it's going to be there next week because nobody knows who Belmondo and Delon are. So I just said, all right, just the next 2 hours, if the supervisor comes, just tell him I'm throwing up in the bathroom. And out the door I went. I saw Borsellino, and I came back. And all these years later at this year's Cannes Film Festival, you know, I'd seen Belmondo here and there. But finally, I was at a table, you know, and I was with Len Blavatnik, you know, who owns Warner Music. And he said, go up there already. And I go, no, that's Paul Belmondo. He said, go up there and say hello. So I walked in. He knew who I was. Of course, I knew everything about him. And he then invited me to spend the next lunch with him for 3 or 4 hours, and I wrote an article about my appreciation for him for La Parisienne, the magazine, and they ran it in the Huffington Post here. And, you know, Borsellino is probably my favorite movie of his, you know, he and Delon, because they have that incredible chemistry. And, you know, I hum the theme for the movie, you know, for him, and asked him a million questions. And he and Delon are great pals, you know, and at 82 years old, my last image was, as I walked out of the hotel that he was at, there was a picture of him on the wall, a current picture, and he was hanging out of a helicopter. And what people don't know about Belmondo was he did his own stunts like Jackie Chan. I mean, that nose of his, you know, got broken.
And he started as a boxer in the same way, too.
Yeah, you know, whatever. So this is a guy who just always insisted on doing this. He's 82 years old. I'm saying, is that you? He said, yeah, that was last spring. You whatever, hanging outside of a not for a movie. Just because he got a helicopter ride to France, he opened up the door and just said, "Nah, you know, when I'm going to put my feet out the door." He is truly a daredevil at 82 years old.
I'm glad you've seen Borsellino, because it's basically a kind of a throwaway gangster movie, comedy, a movie that was atypical of that period of France in the early 70s. But just again about two actors taking a lot of pleasure in that relationship they have, and it's. It's really the first thing I thought about when I saw Untouchables is that kind of chemistry.
You know, and in Borsellino, without giving it away, it's the two gangsters, you know, who are opposites. You know, it starts with them punching each other out. And then, you know, later on, Delon gets seduced by high society, you know, and Belmondo always stays as he always did as a blue-collar guy. You know that the love these two have for each other, you know, as brothers in arms, is stronger than the feeble seduction of the high society that takes Delon into it, and that, you know, ultimately, whatever, I'm not going to give it away. But
there's a similar kind of sort of class schism in Untouchables, too.
Right, because Delon is always the sophisticated, you know, who can walk both ways.
And also always the corruptible one, too.
The corruptible movie. One, too. Yes, exactly. And whereas Belmondo is incorruptible and blue collar. Yeah, it's a great comment. It's a great, you know, and, you know, Jacques Duret, who directed that, you know, there's no, is he an auteur? I don't know. You know what I mean? You know, but he's a great filmmaker. I mean, he made great movies, you know, Duret. So, yeah, this is, you know, Borsellino is just wildly entertaining. The Untouchables is wildly entertaining. If people are up for a wildly entertaining movie, they will not be disappointed.
I'm talking to film historian and entrepreneur Harvey Weinstein. We're talking about everything, although we should get to the Untouchables at some point. It's the treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. But I see all the things that people hear about you, and I spent a bit of time with you. I know you can talk movies probably better than anybody running a studio. Don't you think that's a peculiar thing, that you would be kind of sui generis in this way?
Well, I think that, you know, I loved it, studied it. You know, Paris holds a special key for me. Robert Hakim, who produced Weekend in Dunkirk with Belmondo, Pepe Lamoco, Belle de Jour, Isadora. When I was a kid, I was studying film with Dr. O'Grady at the University of Buffalo, but I used to go to Paris on the weekends, and a friend of mine introduced me to Robert Hakim, this great French retired producer, and he'd sit at the George Sang and basically for 4 hours beat me up, you know, ever, because just say, oh, you know, you think you're a lion, you're a lamb, you know, and he just always taught me about how to handle actors, including a great story about how Alain Delon made Plein de Soleil, which was a movie I later remade as Talented Mr. Ripley, and that Delon walked off the movie. movie. And he said to Hakim, why aren't you, you know, agreeing to my demands? You know, he said, because they'll never stop, Hakim said. He said, but you'll never, you can't finish the movie. You have 3 weeks of me in the movie. It's too expensive to start with somebody else. Hakim said, I will fix you, Mr. Delone. And what happened was, when Delone tried to make another movie, Hakim made sure that no insurance company in the world would insure him.
Is that true?
Yes. And as a result, Delone had to come back and finish Plan du Soleil before he ever got insured. So if people think it's my playbook, you know, whatever, I have the greatest French producer of all time.
You take your lead from the French in this respect.
I do take my lead, and he produced the Southerner, Jean Renoir's movie, and, you know.
In the States, we should say.
In the States, you know, because he came here as a, you know, to run away from the Nazis. So an incredible story, an incredible man, an incredible inspiration to me.
We should say the movie, by the way, for people might know by the title Purple Noon as well.
Purple Noon, yeah.
Which is, it's fascinating because I guess you are, in effect, a studio head and a producer. Which of these guises feels more comfortable to you?
Well, Elvis, as you know, I appreciate the compliment, but, you know, you hang out with you or Marty Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino, and I've been privileged to be in those rooms, you get a dose of film history. And one of the great things about Marty and, you know, the great thing about Quentin is when you make a movie with either one of them, every Sunday you watch another movie, you know, which is usually the inspiration for something or other. You know, it's pure enjoyment, but it's also there, something's going on. And I remember, you know, Marty, Up to the Gangs in New York, I saw it from the Bowery. I mean, you know, Marty's like, you know, like the master professor, you know, and Quentin's like the fun professor, you know. You know, he's like the young stud where you have laughs and fun and, you know, the movie, you know, you're going to see any old thing. And you know, you can see a Roy Rogers movie with Quentin. You know, Marty, you're going to see classic movies.
Well, so, yeah, but you great. Also see Land of the Pharaohs, too. I don't know if anybody in his right mind would call that a classic.
I, you know what, I've got to make it through that movie. You know, I know it's Howard Hawks, but I never understood why it was Howard Hawks.
William Faulkner, a whole bunch of people who should know better.
Really?
Were done that movie.
Was it because of Joan Collins? What was the deal there?
You tell me. I mean, we're talking about this, and we're at a point in this culture where what you're talking about with Scorsese and with Quentin, these are guys who still look at the theater as being the temple where you go to worship and take these films in. Mm. For most people, and a generation of filmmakers even, film is a platform that should be available everywhere. How do you sort of work these two worlds now, especially as the culture is shifting more towards the latter than the former?
In France, they passed a law, getting back to France for a second, which is anti-piracy law, because people are saying, why are you making so many French movies, or why are you doing so many French business? And it was very simple. They protect you, Elvis Mitchell, when you write an article for a newspaper. It's very nice of, you know, these papers to link them, you know, whatever, and, you know, and you don't, they say, for further information, see Elvis Mitchell on, you know, Howard Hawks in the Land of the Pharaohs. Great, you don't get paid for it. You mean, in the same way when they show 10 minutes of clips on YouTube of Chicago, and there's 9 of the clips, and you can see 90 minutes of the movie for free, you know, I don't get paid for it either. Neither does Rob Marshall, the director, or any of the cast. So France said, anytime you do that, you got to pay these guys. And anytime you pirate something, newspaper, article, record, anything, you mean, we're going to click off your internet service. It's like, you know, my kind of, like Judge Roy Bean trial, you know, whatever. You're guilty and then prove you're innocent. So they just click you off. So here's what happened to the business. The box office is booming. Video is up 12.5%. In our country, it's down 40%. And artists are getting paid. You know, painters are getting paid. And people aren't getting ripped off. So I think with that kind of stand against these giant internet companies, you know, it's very nice of them to say, look, we don't believe in product. And, you know, the internet's for everybody. These are $500 billion companies that are talking. You know, they might wear tie-dye T-shirts, you know what I mean? But they might as well be Snarly Whiplash, as far as I'm concerned, you know.
My guest, who is not wearing a tie-dye T-shirt sitting across from me, is Harvey Weinstein. We're talking about a number of things, but movies, Untouchables. We'll take a break. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Make a donation of just a dollar a day and you can join one of our exciting and exclusive angel clubs. Choose from music, books, DVDs, or cookbooks delivered right to your front door. Learn more and join now at kcrw.com/join.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm sitting across from, of all people, Harvey Weinstein, who's managed to come to this studio. Why would you come for this movie? You've done so many things. Untouchables clearly means a lot. Why get behind this movie in such a personal way?
Well, Omar Sy, who's the star of the movie, who won the César for Best Actor, is making a movie with Michelle Gondry, and it's 3 weeks over. He should be doing this, you know. He had a schedule, and I just said, you know what, you know, or my office said, you're stepping in. So while I stepped in, I said, let's expand it, you know, because I'm having a good time, you know, talking about the film and getting out there. It's not something that I'm going to do on any regular basis, I assure you.
So I shouldn't assure plan on having you back then?
No, I'll come back, but like, you know, maybe after Oscar season or something like that, we can discuss the post game. But, you know, it's just something that, you know, I love this movie and I want to see it do well. And I'm very touched by the audience reaction to the film. I've had many movies that people are, you know, touched and talk about. But the way they come out of this movie, you know, in these tougher economic times, people feel really good when they see this. And I like that, you know, for this moment in history.
But you're
know,
also...
I'll give them enough, you know, downers coming up in the fall. But for now, this is the dessert before the dinner.
The happy 4th of July fireworks before the Merry Christmas from Django Unchained in December.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yes, that's quite a Christmas present you're going to leave for people. But before we get to that, you're remaking this movie, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's funny, as I continue to go around the interviews, one of the great things is people say to me, why? And you always think that, you know, the subtitles are a barrier. It's in French. But we'll see how it goes. You mean, because everywhere I go from, you know, people come up to me and say, don't do it. You know, I mean, well, right now I have Paul Feig, the director of Bridesmaids, and Colin Firth. So it's a pretty good reason to do it. But I'm also listening to the people out there.
Why are they saying don't do it?
They say it's perfect the way it is. Don't do it again. I think people love the movie. They're so attached to it around the world that, you know, in a movie like in Germany, we own a lot of the territories overseas. Germany did gross $70 million, this movie. There's no French movie. Inglourious Basterds, you know, which did fabulous, gross $25. So, you know, it just gives you the level of attachment that people have to this. There's something that really touches people emotionally about these two men and their incredible relationship. So I hear it, I listen to it, and unless we can improve upon it, then not even improve upon it, unless we can do something with it that's equally as good, then I'm taking a pause.
Would you try to do something similar to, because Omar Sy's a Senegalese actor, it wasn't an African who was originally in the real story. Do you want to try to make it about the immigration story outside of France? I mean, where is it going to be set? Have you figured all this stuff out
yet? Well, you know, originally the intention was to, you know, to have a black actor, you know, do it. But, you know, I mean, you talk about immigration, you know, the whole Latino thing that's happening right now. It's opened up our eyes. You know, obviously there's an explosion of thought. By the way, I don't know if I can say this, but I absolutely love the Republicans. They say, oh, Barack Obama, you know, is, you know, doing that Latino thing and helping immigration because it's an election year. Then 2 weeks later, Romney says, well, I'm considering something like it. And the same guys from his camp who said the president was electioneering, now when Rubio and Romney start to talk about immigration because they're getting killed with Hispanic, you know, voters, and then that's not electioneering.
It was certainly cold in Florida that day. Please send those cards and emails to Harvey Weinstein. He's my guest. We're talking about the film Untouchables. It's a treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. But it is finally, I mean, in that way, it can be a political film because when the president decided to sort of grant a special status to people who are living in this country, who might have been kicked out under other circumstances. It felt to me like that was a way into the story that you might not have thought about before.
Yeah. You know, the whole theme of immigration sort of exploded at the same time that the movie came out. Now, it's funny, I said to the guys who made the film, they said, but it's been going on for us for years. They said, that's what the movie's about. You know, there's one reviewer in Variety who thought it was an Eddie Murphy movie. I mean, he's, you know, these guys were laughing, including Omar, you know, who's black and put his heart and soul into this movie and just, you know, doesn't understand that people could think it's an Eddie Murphy movie when it's really about immigration. That's what this movie is about. It's about an immigrant because that's their problem. And I think that's what's happening around the world. People see the movie and they're not looking at immigrants the same way.
Because you think about, I couldn't help but think about, you know, Alejandro González Iñárritu's Beautiful, which is also about the immigrant situation in Spain. I mean, it's something that is everywhere now. And this movie becomes a real way to attack that in entertainment terms, doesn't it?
you know, as we know, you can really move the dial when you make an entertaining movie that just says, you know, people are good and people are all right. To Kill a Mockingbird, I think, you know, did more for white Southerners and their stupid mentality, you know, than any movie along those lines. I think that moved the dial for them in ways that, because Gregory Peck did it, you know, I mean, that's the power of movies, you know, to do timely issues. When great actors and great artists make a decision, then I think that there is a strong political undertone to The Untouchables, you know, and it's purposeful.
Well, sure. Know. It's interesting now because we come to a point in this culture where movies about social issues don't really happen so much anymore. Do you feel like that's something you want to try to be more of a focus of what you do, what you guys do over there?
I've always wanted to do that. I think we have over the years. You know, it's one of the things I'm proud of at the company. You know, it was amazing when we did Dogma, for example, and talk about, you know, a Catholic like Kevin Smith, you know, reexamining his, you know, religious role. And, you know, we would get these fun letters. We'd have to have the FBI come up to the office. It would, you know, basically be Dear Jew, Die, you know, for doing this movie. But, and the, you know, when we did Price Above Rubies, which was now such a route, we go back and look at that movie with Renee Zellweger and Boaz Yakim, and the Jewish were funnier. I mean, they would have protests down my office, but I'd come down and they go, would you like a bagel and cream cheese? You know, they said, let's sit down and talk about this. Have a coffee. How could Miriam Weinstein have gone wrong and make a son like you? Come on, Harvey, let's talk.
But you're talking,
as they still protested every day.
But you reminded me of what's kind of really interesting period for Miramax. There were protests all the time. There were kids. I mean, the movie Kids, we couldn't expect to hear your name and not hear there's people outside the theater with placards protesting the movie.
When Priest, you know, happened, my mom was in Westport. And the Miramax logo came up. The entire audience booed. My mom said it was incredible, you know, to hear that, because, you know, the Cardinal, you know, came out on the front page of the Daily News and just, you know, called us as worst things as a Cardinal can call anybody. You know, may he rest in peace. And I like the Cardinal, but you know, I mean, I've been called everything. George Bush Senior, when we, you know, who I love. I saw this new documentary.
I'm sorry, George Bush
Senior.
Who you love? Is that what
no? I love him because either, you know, I saw this 41, the documentary in HBO. I never knew that he had a daughter 4 years old who died. You know, there are things in that movie that are very revealing, and you understand. I mean, you know, the call to duty. He called us a-holes when we did Fahrenheit 9/11, but he was a war hero. And you know, when his plane crashed, you know, and every one of the guys in the crew says the same thing. He waited until they were all out. I like a guy like that. I might not share his politics, but I like a guy like that.
Well, the fellow who just went from being tough to tender before my very eyes is Harvey Weinstein. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. You've got a really big year coming up this year. I mean, you've got films from two of the most important auteurs in the business now. You've got Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master, which is a look at religion. It's just sure to stir up a few picketers in theaters when it plays. Then you got Django Unchained from Quentin Tarantino, which will do the same. Yes, it's neither of these films are musical comedies, so they will stir the kind of laughs that Untouchables will. But these are films that, in some way, to me, feel like they're getting back to this need to sort of stir up controversy that I associate with what you've done in the past.
It isn't the need to stir up controversy. It's the need to support filmmakers who want to have a voice, and they want an unfiltered, uncensored voice. You know, I've always wanted to work with Paul Thomas Anderson, but I don't think there's any accident why we got together on this. You know, Megan Ellison's a brilliant producer, but I think the themes of this movie and the subject matter, I mean, you need somebody who's going to step in front of this and be fearless about it. And, you know, I think, you know, that's a calling card that we fit as a company, and that's in our DNA, be it Miramax or the Weinstein Company. We are them. And I think in Quentin's situation, wildly entertaining, but, you know, I think Quentin's dealing with a lot of political issues and doing master work. You know, I mean, you know, people talk about a golden age of cinema. Throw David Russell in there. I mean, with Silver Linings, which is such a wonderful movie, a great auteur. Andrew Dominik, the most stubborn Australian filmmaker ever, but talented nonetheless. Really talented.
And this movie, this version
and of Hill Coates Lawless, I mean, you know, and
which was the Wettest County.
Which was Wettest County. I mean, you know, we have, you know, a number of great auteurs. And I'll tell you something, you know, as we are, you know, we believe in giving people a break. Dustin Hoffman is 74 years old. He never directed a movie. And he's done something, you know, we talk about Ernst Lubitsch. I don't want to over get him into, you know, that
thing. You don't want to oversell the movie.
Yeah, I don't want to oversell the movie. But, you know, but just to see a movie that's smart and funny with Maggie Smith, directed by Dustin, and to watch these performances, you know, at 74 years old, I mean, he's as youthful as anybody. I wish he was 24 and, you know, had another alternate career as a director.
You're saying golden age. Do you really feel that, or is it just because the relationship you have feels that way to you? Because we look at the way movies are in total now, and for good or bad, you know, the Avengers is now on its way to becoming one of the biggest movies, box office successes in history. And I bow to no man on my level of comic characters, but doesn't that kind of sort of seed the feel to movies that are tentpole films rather than the kinds of things you want to do?
But that movie is so well done, and Joss is so talented. I mean, they got the right guy to make the movie. It's so brilliantly told story-wise. The acting is off the charts.
No, I'm even a fan of it, but if we sort of... Okay, let's look at the way Christopher Nolan
got...
But then
The Untouchables does $350 million for it. So in other words, if you, you know, if you believe in it and if you fight for it, you know, a lot of people say, hey, they don't want to make adult movies anymore. Okay, well, they roll up your sleeves and go out and promote it. Go out and fight for what you believe. I mean, I never stop. You know what I mean? We believe in something. We're passionate about something. And when we're passionate, we're really good at what we do.
But what I want to ask you before we go is, the piracy aside, the fact is that movie theaters aren't places where people over 30 really go anymore. They stay at home to watch television because at this point, what your biggest competitor for the kind of movies you like to do is series television.
Yeah, and series television, I saw The Newsroom. You know, I thought that was astonishing. You know, I mean, for me, the best new series on television. I thought, wow, you mean everything that I grew up on that this country kind of forgot. You know, once upon a time, CBS News was, you know, because of Paley, the Golden Network, the Tiffany Network, because they had high ideals. And Edward Murrow, you know, went into your home and also blasted Joe McCarthy. And Walter Cronkite ended the war in Vietnam. All of a sudden, here's Aaron Sorkin beating the drum for that kind of thing the same way that he did in The West Wing. I hope every kid watches that and grows up an idealist as opposed to, you know, I hate when they just say, you know, every week, how did movies do? Even the independent things, you know, everybody's just judging everything by money.
But there are people who would say you're kind of responsible for that, though, by making it into – by putting independent film in the realm where suddenly it's thought of as being a profit center rather than a way to express yourself artistically.
Profit center is very simple. If a movie makes profits, then there's more to make other movies. It doesn't mean just because we do that and enable so many films to get made and enable other people to invest in the thing. And there are amazing companies. Fox Searchlight's an amazing company. Sony Classics, you know, I don't think those guys have a love affair with me, but I think they do great work. And Focus, you know, I mean, I love Moonrise Kingdom. I thought that was such an astonishing movie.
Well, Harvey Weinstein and Detente. I never thought I'd live this long. We're out of time. Harvey, thanks so much for doing this.
Will you play Love Me Tender as I exit the studio?
Let me think about it. No, well, I won't do that. But will you come back to do a post-Oscar sort of summary for us?
I'm here for the post-game show.
Okay.
I'll bring Charles Barkley with me.
It's not TNT, it's the treatment. My guest is Harvey Weinstein. Thanks so much for doing this, Harvey.
Elvis, a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. My recording engineer, KCRW, is Harriet Ells. The show is mixed by J.C. Swadek. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I can't believe it. Harvey Weinstein and peace. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's the treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.